welcome to a new edition of Plain Talking. In this podcast, we'll hear from an Indian woman whose ordination to Christian ministry will be a unique occasion. We'll catch up with Christian Aid's response to the recent floods that have devastated parts of Libya. And Brother David Jardine will offer a closing reflection. On Sunday, the 10th of September, Storm Daniel hit Libya. More than 11,000 people are known to have died after the catastrophic Mediterranean storm burst two dams and flooded the eastern port city of Derna. Over 10,000 people are missing after torrents of water and debris swept away entire districts. Bodies are being recovered from the sea. The storm has destroyed houses and utility supplies, leaving many areas without any electrical power or water. Families seeking refuge at shelters have lost everything. Hundreds of homes are buried under mud and debris, and the fear is that many people are also buried in the mud. In response to this crisis, Christian Aid has launched its own appeal, and I recently caught up with Jenny Weaver, the charity's Church Engagement and Fundraising Officer in Wales, and asked her to tell us more about the appeal.
Yes, so as we've seen on our news feeds and on TV, in Libya, thousands of people have died and thousands more are still missing after Storm Daniel caused heavy rainfall. And in fact, in the space of 24 hours, 400 millimetres of rainwater fell, causing two dams to burst. Now, floodwaters spread quickly through the port city of Derna, causing extensive damage to infrastructure, including electricity, hospitals, roads, and telecommunications. And those that have survived have lost everything. Many homes have been washed away or been buried under mud.
Yeah, just as you're talking there, Jenny, it's just an unimaginable devastation, isn't it? I think many of us will have seen the kind of news coverage, just the sense of devastation in that city of Derna, I think, yes, on the coast. Extraordinary. Mm-hmm. In the face of so much loss, grief, devastation, how is Christian Aid responding to this?
Well, Christian Aid is working directly with Dan Church Aid. They're our ACT Alliance partner, and they've had an established presence in Libya since 2011. So they're helping people who have lost their homes, livelihoods, and loved ones. Now, the emergency response is about getting medical care to those who need it, so setting up shelters for people and also providing clean water and sanitation facilities to help prevent the risk of waterborne diseases. And Dan Church Aid are distributing essential supplies, including hygiene kits, shelters and bedding. Christian Aid have launched an appeal to support Dan Church Aid's work. And so the donations are, you can take donations on our website at christianaid.org.uk.
Instead of interest, Jenny, what does Dan Aid stand for?
Danish. So it's a Danish partner in that's part of our ACT Alliance partners.
Do we have any sense of how the rest of the country has fared?
The extent of the damage was largely in that northern port area, but of course the whole of the country will have been affected, won't it? Because, you know, people, communities are affected quite widespread. And the work that Dan Church Aid will undertake will move away from there, as well as we know that the flooding is known to have spreads subsurface explosive items, such as mines from previous conflicts. So Dan Church Aid will be putting measures in place to try and combat similar disasters and help people more widely put their lives back together. So that work isn't just limited to that geographical area, but more widely as they work out where are the needs, and how can they help?
And I guess a number of people may be thinking, well, you know, Christian is a huge charity which does work across the world. I guess other people may be thinking, do you work in partnership with other relief agencies who I guess are also focusing their efforts on Libya at the moment?
So Christian Aid are part of a number of different alliances, such as ACT Alliance, where there's a number of global partners. We're also part of the Disasters Emergency Committee. A number of those charities are based in the UK and have partners overseas. So there is always a response from one of those partners. We'll be able to work alongside. Working alongside others is a really important part of our work. We work in partnership with others, and particularly with people on the ground who have that knowledge, that insight, that know-how to get things done. So working in partnership is really important for Christian Aid as we carry out this essential work of responding to emergencies and disasters like this.
If you could just remind us again, if we want to give, if anybody listening to this would like to give to the Christian Aid people, how do they do that?
Well, we're so grateful for the generosity of the public. And if you'd like to make a donation, you can donate online at christianaid.org.uk.
Rebecca Lalbiaksangi has been working for the Presbyterian Church of Wales for some years. She will soon be ordained as a minister in Newtown, Powys, and she has quite a story to tell.
I am originally from Mizoram, which is the northeast part of India, and I came to Wales in 2011 with my husband, and now we have two children, Hannah and Seren. Hannah was born in Madagascar because I went to Madagascar in 2003 to be a partner mission through the Council for World Mission. So while in Madagascar, I was at the orphanage that the church looks after, and I also helped with the AIDS project that the church is running at that time. And our first daughter was born there. We came to Penrith in South Wales to work at Llanfair Uniting Church.
Yeah.
And then Seren, our second daughter, born here in Wales. That's why she's called Seren.
Star.
She has, Welsh name.
So Rebecca, you that's an extraordinary story, and we could, you know, it'd be great to talk to you about Madagascar, Penrith, which is an extraordinary, you know, mountain that splits the Rhondda Valley.
Very special place,
But today we're going to talk about a really exciting development in your life in terms of your ordination. So do you want to talk about that journey of becoming a minister?
Yes, this is something that's been in my life for quite a while, but I kind of try to push away to become a minister. So being a missionary since 2003, I thought that is where I should be. But since being here in Mid Wales, that call has come really, really clear, especially during the COVID time, because I have more time to reflect, and then that really took me that I cannot say no anymore to God. So I shared this with my minister and some close friends, and so I studied theology in Cardiff Baptist College through the Cardiff University, and now I finished, and I got a call from the pastorate where we are now. Our minister, Reverend Dine Sterling, is retiring this month. And I received this call, and I officially said yes, and things are moving on, and they arranged a time for me to be ordained on the 4th of October.
Well, that's terrific.
Year. Yes.
Congratulations.
It's amazing how God leads me. Yeah.
So, Rebecca, part of your story, of course, is someone from Mizoram.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right.
As part of the Presbyterian Church of India.
Yes.
So I gather your ordination, from what we can tell, is quite a moment.
It is, because back home in the Presbyterian Church of India, women are not ordained yet. Even for elders, women are not ordained yet. So this is a really, really big thing for myself and for my church back home. And I hope that maybe one day things will change gradually about women ordination in the future.
Do you carry that? Do you have a? You must have a sense of history or making history.
I felt a little bit in some way, but in a positive way. I really hope that my ordination will have an opening time for the women in the northeast part of India. And I'm praying for that as well. And I'm grateful to the Presbyterian Church of Wales to ordain me and receive and understand my call and ordain me. So I'm very grateful to them.
And as you consider your new ministry in, I guess, in Mid-Wales.
Mid-Wales, that's right.
So with your wealth of experience and with your heritage of being in another part of the world, the kind of global south. What's it like ministering in rural Wales?
That's right. I have this story, a very special story that I want to share with you. So the people who comes to bring gospel to us are the Welsh people. So for me and my husband, who is from Madagascar, equally the same Welsh people who goes to Madagascar to bring the gospel. So first missionaries are Welsh. So Welsh people are so special in both cultures. It has been a call for us to work here in Wales, in the churches and the projects that they do. And one thing that is really special, when we moved up to Mid Wales to work in the presbytery, we realized that the pastorate that we're working, the three chapels were the ones that Reverend D.E. Jones, who is the first Presbyterian missionary who came to Mizoram, he looked after as an assistant pastor in those days. And while he was in this pastorate, he got a call to go to Mizoram, and he became the first Presbyterian missionary to go to Mizoram. And that really, really moved us, and to be able to look after his church after all these years. And it spoke to us that if he had known this, that Amizo came to his area and to minister in this area, how would he feel? I'm sure he'll be very happy. And this call that I had to be able to be a minister, even so, I mean, at this point, I am not a minister yet. My husband and I used to share as a mission enabler, so we were working with the different chapels in the area. But to be able to minister in this pastorate is a very, very special thing for me. Yes.
So it's a full circle.
Yes. It's
full
amazing.
Circle. Wow. Well, Rebecca, we could talk and talk, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, Brother David Jardine muses on the power of prayer.
It's almost exactly 50 years since I joined the Society of St. Francis. I'd been ordained in the Church of Ireland in 1967 and then served two curacies. But for a number of years, I had had a niggling in my spirit that God had chosen me for something beyond just ordination. In 1964, a founder member of the Society of St. Francis, Brother Kenneth, came to speak at the Church of Ireland Centre in Queen's University in Belfast, where I was studying at that time. He spoke about the society, the vows, the lifestyle, the life of prayer, and how it was founded. It was a complete revelation to me that there were religious communities like these outside the Roman Catholic Church. Yet even though I was already committed to training for ordination in the Church of Ireland, I now began to get a sense of calling to the Society of St. Francis. I didn't relish that possibility. Living under vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, especially chastity, which meant I would have to remain unmarried, and going about wearing brown robes. For a number of years, the sense of calling ebbed and flowed. And eventually in 1971, I had the opportunity to meet Bishop Trevor Huddleston, who is a member of the Community of the Resurrection at Moorfield in Yorkshire. I explained my dilemma, and he advised me to go and have a retreat in a community that I was not thinking of joining. I wasn't thinking of joining Moorfield, so he encouraged me to go there. I went during Holy Week 1971, When I arrived, one of the brothers opened the door and put me in a small waiting room while he went to look for the guest master. As I waited, I took a book down from the shelf called A Choosing. It was a book about vocation, and it said that the heart of God's call is the words of Jesus in John's Gospel to his own disciples. You have not chosen me, I have chosen you. That spoke very powerfully to me. I could have closed the book at that moment and gone back to Belfast. My mission was complete. It was another 2 years before I entered the Society of St. Francis, September the 13th, 1973, to be exact. I flew from Belfast to Exeter, took a train to Sherborne, where I was met by Brother Christian, who took me to the friary. That evening, at evening prayer, I was made a postulant of the Society of St. Francis, when my journey in the religious life had begun. In the 50 years that have passed since then, I've had an amazing variety of experiences. But if you were to ask me what part of the life of SSF made the biggest impact on me, it would have to be the life of prayer. On a personal level, that relationship with God through prayer has been the rock on which my life is built. But it has also allowed me to influence for good the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and to make a difference in situations which have no human solution. I think of 1993, when the troubles in Northern Ireland had been going for 24 years. People felt that they would never end in our lifetime. But in 1993, I felt God telling me to go home to the friary every afternoon and pray for an hour each time that violence in Northern Ireland would end. I did that, walking round and round the small chapel. I remember well, surprisingly enough, the great sense of confidence I had that my prayers were making a difference. This was not pride on my part, just a sense that being obedient to what God was asking me to do was bringing results. I kept this up every day for weeks and months. Was it a coincidence that less than a year later, the IRA called a ceasefire and loyalists followed suit a few weeks later? The Society of St. Francis did a marvelous job, not just in giving me time to pray, 3 hours built into our program every day, but in teaching me how prayer can make a difference in the most seemingly intractable situations. I'm trying to encourage you that your prayers can also make a big difference in situations, both large and small.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Plain Talking. If you have, please subscribe to it and leave a review wherever you found this podcast. Plain Talking is sponsored by The Plain Truth, a magazine of understanding. For more information, please visit plain-truth.org.uk. That's it for now until the next podcast drops. So God bless from all of us at Plain Talking.